L-E-T-E-N-P-C.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Is that?
That's a lackluster clap this week.
Hello and welcome to episode 30 of the Tottenham Way podcast. I am Tom, I am your host. With me, as ever, is the writer, ESPN correspondent, all-round good guy, Tottenham Way contributor and founder, Daniel Patrick.
That's a proper introduction.
See, you asked for it and I've provided it.
Cheers.
How are you doing,
man? I'm very well, thanks, mate.
Good. Good to see you. We welcome back this week Kev from the AVB special that we did probably about 4 or 5 months ago now.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Kev, of course, who you may know better as Bankrupt Spurs on Twitter. Kev, thank you very much for coming down again.
No, it's my pleasure.
No dossier.
I've come with no preparation whatsoever, so the opposite of that, so we'll see how that works.
So you came like AVB to the AVB special, and you've come like Mr. Sherwood to the... We didn't really mention it last time. We tried to steer clear as best as possible. But no, welcome back, Kev. Thanks. Very much. And you've pretty much had one of the best podcasts to possibly come on, because the result that we've just had, 2-1 away at City, is pretty... momentous.
I feel like
over
you need to mention
of...
yesterday that this is take two.
You
tried to get us to record in a Burger King.
I didn't try anything, mate.
I mentioned Burger King and you said not a bad shout.
It wasn't a bad shout. I stand by that. I still think we've made the right decision to delay it by a day. Yeah, apologies to anyone that was maybe expecting it last night when we usually publish, but it wasn't possible. There was a double booking at the... as you put it in inverted commas, studio last night. It wasn't possible. But we've reconvened today, we've regathered. We are going to try and get excited again about the weekend, because it feels like it's quite an exhausting thing to be that happy for such a sort of sustained time.
I don't
time.
Know if it'll be good for the pod or bad, but I've definitely calmed down a bit today. I feel like the dust has settled a bit from the Man City result.
Yeah,
I feel a bit more measured, a bit less giddy. And the focus is kind of shifting a little bit toward Thursday.
That's fair.
So that's no bad thing, because we might be a bit more reasonable in our discussion instead of just being like, we're going to win the title!
Yeah, that's very true.
I was so happy immediately after the result that I went straight and tried to clean my fridge.
Wow,
That's not something that anyone would do.
Do you get the nervous energy thing? Do you get that thing after a game, I'll find that I'm... really tired and I have to find something practical to do otherwise I'm asleep at 7.
I don't really get that. I would say that last 5 minutes of the City game was probably the worst 5 minutes I've had since the Chelsea League Cup final in extra time.
What, in 2008?
Yeah.
The one we won. Yeah.
So.
Oh, that was stressful.
That nearly killed me, that one.
Well, who hit the post right in the last minute? Was it...
It wasn't the last... It was... The whistle had gone. The whistle went.
Ah, oh, that's right, yeah.
As it was hitting the post, I think. I can't remember.
They hit the post.
Was it Drogba, mate?
Chelsea, yeah.
Yeah.
Drogba went through, yeah. I know Cole had a chance and Robinson saved a couple that were like directly at him, but they looked so much better than they actually were, because it was so, like... It was horrible to watch at the time.
I think that's quite a good shout, because I was going to suggest the Arsenal derby last year, the Kane header... But I was drunk, so I don't actually remember.
And in Liverpool as well, yeah.
Whereas I was stone cold sober on Sunday. I was sort of knew I had a bit of work to do after the game, so I'm with Kev. It was that 4 minute stoppage time felt like about 40 minutes. It was unbearable.
Well, I unfortunately wasn't available to watch. I was watching in the old fashioned way on BBC Sport, like some sort of caveman.
Well, it's second week running, you haven't watched the game.
That's true, yeah, it's really bad.
Unbelievable unprofessionalism.
I was working one of the times on the Norwich game. No, the whatever was after Norwich. So that's like ultimate professionalism, really.
Okay.
This is still a adventure. This podcast.
No, speak for yourself. Mate.
Are you earning money off of this? Not
No.
Getting money off the Masons. So yeah, I didn't see any of it. I watched the highlights, but guys, go run with this.
I would say you didn't really miss much in terms of a game of football because I thought it was quite a poor game. Yeah. I mean, I thought both teams were not great. I mean, we had a lot of possession, but it seemed like there was a plan there from Poch for us to play at a slower tempo and maybe just keep the ball a bit more than we would rather than getting it forward as quickly as possible. Mm. And I'll be honest, I was a bit sceptical as the first half went on because it seemed like City were there to be had, but we weren't really going for the jugular.
Was it the opposite of what Leicester did last week? When
yeah,
they
basically,
really flew
yeah.
out. They were 2-0 up within, 20 minutes or something?
Yeah, I was preparing to say exactly that point. And I was sort of hoping one of you would disagree with me, but you haven't watched the game and Kev's agreed with me. I thought it was... I was going to say, from a Spurs perspective, I don't actually think it was Spurs anywhere near their best.
No.
I don't think it... As a team, it clicked. And I think there were lots of individuals, especially in the first half, that looked a little bit off the pace and not really in tune with their teammates. And as a result... It was very formulaic, the first half in particular. It was like Spurs had a lot of the ball, they'd eventually get it wide to Danny Rose, who had a really great game.
I thought Rose was amazing, I thought.
But he would normally hit the first man with a cross, which was ironically what actually got Spurs the goal in the end.
Yeah.
The first goal.
Yeah.
But there was a real pattern to the first half, and it was Spurs couldn't... sort of ran out of ideas in the final third and they couldn't really find a way through City despite having all the ball.
Yeah, but we didn't, from what I saw, it didn't look like City created anything too clear cut, certainly in the first half. Aguero had a couple that usually sticks away. He seemed to miss all of his chances that he hasn't scored against us in that game.
Mercifully, he didn't seem very sharp. He snaps at a lot of his shots.
Yeah,
albeit there were half chances.
Yeah, it didn't seem to be that.
I was actually thinking about this today. I was thinking that City kind of remind me of us under Redknapp, where they've got a few really, really good players that kind of mask the fact that the team is generally not that great. I mean, I'm not sure how many people would agree with me, but I don't think City are that good a team anymore. I mean,
they have
some really amazing players, but the central defence is the obvious, company aside, they've got some poor players that, you know, I think they're about where they should be in terms of.
Yeah, I'd actually agree.
I don't disagree. They feel like, I read somewhere this week someone describing them as a very good team coming to the end of a cycle.
Yeah.
And which they literally are because Guardiola's replacing Pellegrini.
Yeah, that's very true.
But it does feel like that, like they. They've got good players, as Kev says, but they really need freshening up.
Mm.
Whereas Spurs are just starting that cycle. And this season, they're just clicking into gear.
Yeah.
They've won 7 games in all competitions now. And I hate doing this, but I also love doing it. But I did say last week, I felt like Spurs might just have too much for City if they played the usual high-energy, relentless game that Spurs play. And... Yeah, it almost didn't surprise me, but having said that, it was obviously
horrible watch. I do agree that I think after sitting there and sort of digesting what had happened, because all I had to go on was a result, nothing else. Excuse me, I did think, you know what? Actually, it's not a huge surprise that we went there and won. I think I said last week we haven't won there in 5 years through various different circumstances. We've either been atrocious or we've been within a hair's breadth of taking a 3-2 win. You know, it's very, our relationship with City since the money is very strange, but looking at it on paper, a 2-1 win for us away at Man City wasn't that surprising, but it's massive, and I think that's where the excitement's come from, because Leicester's win over Man City was kind of them being like, you know what, we are here.
To us, it wasn't that surprising. Maybe. To Spurs fans, because we've seen firsthand what this team's
been doing. And to City fans, I think, as well, actually.
But I think to everyone else, it's one of those, it feels like one of those slightly seminal results when the rest of the league is just like, oh, Spurs are fucking good.
You're allowed to swear on that one.
Just editorially justifiable.
Yeah. I've got a feeling from the reaction of the players and the manager at the end as well that maybe they now think, hang on, maybe we could do this, because it didn't seem like a normal reaction at the end of the game, the celebration.
I want to ask you about that, and I don't mean to be that guy that always brings this down.
It was so good.
Because I do, I know I do. I know I am that guy, but all I want to say is that we had Rich and Alex on a couple of weeks ago, and I mentioned then about how the similarities that are coming between Liverpool's title challenge a couple of seasons ago and our title challenge this season, let's say. And obviously your retort to that was that they had a world-class player in Suarez who was just steamrolling the league, which is fine, and I agree. But I want to put that across again, and I'm going to ask you, Kev, as well. Do you think that we have maybe got a slight edge because this is turning into a real emotional thing for players? These are players that are kind of, if you look at players like Kane, who kind of written off, I suppose, at 20, and then suddenly he's like this... He's one of the best strikers in the whole of Europe.
Well, interestingly, Henry Winter wrote a piece in the Times today using that angle. I don't know if you read it.
Yeah, was it? Yeah.
It was along the lines of Pochettino made the players stay, and it was a bit of a flimsy premise, but he said that Pochettino deliberately made the players stay and watch Chelsea lift the League Cup last year, and then he said, learn from this, and he's... said that in the dressing room there's a feeling of they don't want that to happen again.
Yeah.
Which is, I suppose, what you're saying, that it's been an emotional thing.
Yeah, and also with that, do you feel like we're maybe...
But you're saying this is a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it's a good thing. I think it can propel you, but I think that when you get a slight setback, which you can, and we probably are going to have over the next 13 games, there could be that one thing. And that, in Liverpool's season, was Gerrard's slip, and they completely went to pieces after that. And so what I'm wondering is do you feel like this is a genuine...
I don't agree with you at all.
That's what all my question is. I'm not saying that it's a bad thing.
I think, first of all, Spurs have responded... What Spurs have done brilliantly this season is use setbacks to their advantage. So when we've lost... I mean, the Man City game feels like a different season now, but when we've lost to the other two games, to... Newcastle and Leicester, we've then gone on our best runs, which have seen us shoot up the table. So I know that it changes when you can physically like touch it and you're that close and the wins mean more, but I still think Spurs responding to setbacks is one of their biggest strengths, and I maintain that Liverpool weren't really a team, they were a group of players spearheaded by two world-class strikers.
That's fair enough.
Which has kind of been proved since.
Yeah, definitely.
And so, I don't think this team is... I mean, I want to talk about the celebration in a minute because it was glorious, but I feel like this team's not that... I don't think there's a great deal of emotion. I almost feel like they're more robotic in the way they're just sort of like, on to the next game.
Perhaps.
It's a long way to go. On message and it's so...
But the City celebrations was quite a break from that, I felt. And I know we've every right to celebrate it. It was done by the fans, so why shouldn't the players and management celebrate it as well? But there was a tiny little part of me, as the grumpy man that I am, that was just sitting there and just thought, it is still February. You know, we've been here, we've done this before, and we've messed it up in a variety of ways. And I have total trust in this team of not doing it, but all I'm doing is I'm playing devil's advocate. I'm asking the question more than saying I think it's a bad thing, because I certainly don't, and I loved it, and I love the video that we've got.
I think that's fair enough. What I would say is I don't think we as fans should overplay the desire of this group of players as being the thing that's driving us, driving these results, because I think all season the fact that we're actually a really good team has been overlooked, and when people have mentioned us as title contenders, us as fans have kind of been dismissive and kind of said, oh, you know, it's just, we're Spurs, something will go wrong. I think, and also people are talking about it being a weak league and all these kind of things that play down. I don't think we realise as fans sometimes what a good team we are. We have good individual players and they function as a team, which is, I think we are genuinely are one of the best teams in the league.
Yeah.
And
I think there's a strong case we're the best team in the league.
Yeah.
Probably one of them, along with Leicester, the most settled.
I don't think there's too much. I personally think, as much as it pains me to say, I would say ourselves, Arsenal and Leicester are probably the three best teams.
Yeah. We're certainly the highest team.
There's not much in between.
We're the only team that hasn't taken a pasting. Leicester got spanked by Arsenal King Power, and Arsenal got spanked by Southampton, and City have got spanked by Liverpool, Spurs, and West Ham.
Very true.
Are by far the hardest to beat team.
We've not lost a game by more than a single goal.
And that's really reflected in the goal difference.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's just astonishing that we're on plus 27.
Yeah. Not in my lifetime, I don't think. We even won 9-1 one season, and we didn't get to that.
I think that got us to about par.
Let's talk about the title challenge then, because we might as well. Jim Snyder Fry.
So you're prepared to call it a title challenge now?
I am, because
before we go on to that, can I just highlight the guy I found who was more pessimistic than you?
Yeah, absolutely. My alter ego, it seems.
Guy who was...
his premise, I loved it.
Commented on one of my articles for ESPN and just said, yeah, but we should remember that there's a good chance Man U are going to win the Europa League, Chelsea will win the Champions League.
So we have to finish second.
Spurs will lose 10 points, we'll finish fourth and we'll miss out again.
is that actually how
I don't know
works?
If that's even possible, but just the fact that this guy wrote a long paragraph on it and he was genuinely very concerned.
That's a proper Spurs fan.
I loved it. I loved the premise behind it and the way that he was...
I didn't blame him at all. Like, I completely understand why you've written that.
He did look like a slightly older fella as well, so he's been seeing years of this. he's looked at this and thought, because everyone already, and I know it's funny to say it, but there is a very real chance that two things can really bite us on the last game of the season, which is Andros Townsend scores against us, and it's 1-1 at Newcastle. From the Bale season, when that rumour went round White Hart Lane that Newcastle would equalise against Arsenal when people were celebrating.
I realised Arsenal were playing Villa on the last day.
Are they?
Yes.
It's
a 3-point banker.
Yeah, that is.
I've got a feeling it won't go to the last day. I've got a feeling it's going to be... I know it looks like, because it's so tight now, it looks like it's going to go. But I think I've got a feeling. This is not based on anything, but I think... I mean, I'm not saying we're going to run away with that, but I think something's going to happen over. I don't think all three of the if we're saying it's a three horse race now, I don't think all three are going to maintain this consistency.
It would be great if it did, and I mean, I'm not sure my heart would be able to take it if we were in that mix. But as an outsider, you want to see a competitive title race.
I'm not sure
again,
I'd be able to do my job properly.
I'm not sure I'll be able to do my life properly.
I'll probably call in sick.
I think Trunk said the other day, Trunk on Twitter said something like, I don't think my heart or mind is fully prepared for an Arsenal-Tottenham title race. No. And he just said something like, apologies in advance for the next 3 months, because there's a very real chance that it could be. What do you think, Kev, then? What do you make of our title challenge? Because I am prepared to call it that now, because it's hard to ignore this. And even if we fell away now and finished 10 points behind whoever does win the league, I think it's kind of masking what is already quite a remarkable achievement this season. We're 10 points clear of fifth and as close to guaranteeing Champions League football.
Yeah, that's kind of been overlooked, hasn't it? Our aim, our target at the start of the season was Champions League football, and unless we really do mess it up, we should be okay in that regard. I mean, it's tempting fate, obviously, but
We've still got United at home as well.
Yeah, I mean, I never look at fixtures. I never look at upcoming fixtures, but I have, given the position we're in. And we have got a very difficult April with a lot of difficult away games. In fact, I think all of our away games for the rest of the season are tricky.
Yeah, I agree.
So it's certainly not going to be easy, but I think we shouldn't forget where we all thought we were at the start of the season and how far we've come. And I honestly think we should just enjoy whatever happens over the next couple of months. we should just enjoy it because
no chance.
I know it's going to be difficult, but it's the first time it has happened in my adult lifetime, I'd say, where I've genuinely felt we're in a title race. Even in those years under AVB and Harry, when it seemed like we were in a title race, I didn't feel like we were actually one of the best teams in the league. It felt like, you know, results were going against us, and we had some amazing players that were kind of dragging us towards the top of the table. But I genuinely feel like we are one of the best teams in the league this season, regardless of whether it's just because it's a weak set of teams this season.
And
you know, I mean, who knows what's going to happen next season? Guardiola comes in, and Man City are suddenly incredible.
Yeah,
Mourinho goes United. To United, or Sherwood.
Or Sherwood indeed, yes, to United. Once, yeah.
and then suddenly they're a force again. Chelsea are presumably going to come back strong again. So we may not be in this position again for a long time. So we should just, however you know, stressful it's going to be, we should just enjoy it for what it is, I think. Especially because the team are playing really well, and it's actually fun to watch them, which is surely what we all want.
We're watching a team kind of learn on the job as well. This is a young team, and we've still got players like Dier. He has fitted so seamlessly into it that you kind of forget that he hasn't had any real dip in form. And Ali as well, we kept saying he's going to have this drop off in form eventually, and he kind of just got a bit tired around Christmas and then had half a game off and then just ran back into the team and sort of bossed it again. Dan, you should mention that quote from Daniel Storey, because I think you mentioned it last night
in an article,
and I loved it.
Yeah, he said, he described Spurs' title challenge as the anti-Father Christmas. As soon as you start believing in it, it ceases to exist. which is sort of perfectly summed up the way, as a fan anyway, I'm thinking about it, because as soon as I start looking at the fixtures, or looking at Arsenal's fixtures, or even just imagining being in a similar position to the one we are now with a couple of games remaining, it's just almost too much.
Yeah.
I just think, no.
See, that's what my thinking is. I'm not being negative about how good we are. That is my thinking. And Stylish Riot asked, will I go on record and apologise to Jim and Harry Sherlock for mugging us off RE the title challenge? Well, no, I won't. But I will admit that we are in it now.
But we should say that Harry called it in about...
He called it before the Arsenal game. It was October, I think, October. Just before the Arsenal game.
And we laughed him off the pod.
Yeah, he hasn't been back since. That's probably why, yeah. Of course, and again, these things don't happen to Spurs, and if we're still in this position at the end of March, I'm still going to think that, but I can admit we're in a title challenge.
This kind of negativity is exactly what Pochettino faced when he went into the first dressing room, and he's managed to convince all those players that they can do this, they can win.
Now he needs to
work on the fans and get us all.
Yeah.
What's the worst that can happen, you know?
Okay.
So we don't win the title. If you just think back at what that sentence is, we don't win the title.
That's why you asked. I think you asked Adam, didn't you, a couple of weeks ago, what he thought of Pochettino. We can fire it back at you as well. I think everyone knows that you are a fan, but
I'm in the luxury position of having wanted Pochettino from before we appointed him, because I have to admit, I'm generally not a big fan of watching other teams in the Premier League. It's just, you know, now we live in an era where you can watch every Spurs game on the internet. That's kind of enough football to get me through life. So I'm not a huge fan of watching other teams, but I did used to make a point of watching Pochettino's Southampton side, because I thought they were really good to watch. So I was really keen. I mean, obviously, there were a few other names being thrown around, and I have to admit, Van Gaal at the time seemed quite attractive, which is
I think we all
Van Gaal.
Absolutely, but that's why I kind of liked when we went for Pochettino, because we knew where we were in a position. We'd been through all these managers that we thought were going to take us, and then suddenly we got Pochettino, and it was like, okay, let's revise some expectations. And he did a bit better than he probably should have in his first season, considering the problems that he faced and kind of the evolution of the team over the season. But this season, this is ridiculous, and he's, I love him.
Yeah, I think, Kev's point about, let's remember where what we all thought before the start of the season is so important, the context of this title challenge. It's easily forgotten, and I've actually noticed a fair amount of revisionism in the media, like people saying,
and amongst fans too.
Saying, "Oh, we were expecting a top four finish, but we didn't expect this." No, absolutely not. We were expecting another season of transition, and certainly when the transfer window shut, and we thought we didn't have a defensive midfielder, and we thought we didn't have a second striker, and we hadn't won yet. A lot of people were predicting about eighth or ninth.
Yeah,
I've noticed. And in fact, revisionism about Pochettino's reign as a whole, because it's very easy to say, well, under AVB and Sherwood, we were sixth, and we've only gone up a few places, but that just doesn't nearly begin to tell the story of how much better we are now than we were then.
Yeah, absolutely.
It is really important to remember that, and yeah, I couldn't agree more with Kev. We do just have to try and enjoy it, because it's so much more than we expected.
Yeah,
and
we've really we've driven quite far off the road of the Man City game. We haven't analysed it, I think, even slightly.
The one thing, that's because I did ask the question of you guys and Adam a few weeks ago. The thing I would want to say about Pochettino, because obviously this is my first chance. The last time I was here, I didn't get to speak about Pochettino or anything that's happening currently. But I do think it's quite interesting, because you mentioned like the managers we've been through, and it's the weird thing about Pochettino is it kind of feels like the end of the story, in the sense that he's kind of an amalgam of all the managers we've had over the past 10 years ago. You've got the I don't even have to explain myself. I would say you've got the Martin Jol, you've got the lovability of Martin Jol, because he is Pochettino is now, I would say, maybe with a few exceptions, fairly universally loved. So he's got that on his side. You've got the focus on fitness of Ramos.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the man management of Redknapp, and you've got the training ground focus of AVB, and then you've got the propensity to wear items from the club shop of Tim Sherwood. So it feels like the end of the story, which is why I'm kind of getting a bit carried away in the whole title.
It feels like it was
meant to be, you know.
Yeah, that's fair. It's like a superhero.
Please write an article on that. if we win the title, that's a brilliant point.
I think we spoke when. Don't like to bring it up, but when we spoke to Jol, well, I do like to bring it up, but yeah, I don't like to do it too often because it's a bit wanky.
Yeah.
When we spoke to Jol and we said, "What do you think of Pochettino as a manager?" And he said, "I like him. He's like me."
Yeah.
And he meant it, I don't think he was trying to be big-headed or anything like that, but he was bringing for you. He's big everything, it's ridiculous. But he said, "I brought through youth, and it was all about kind of giving players a chance and things like that." And if you do that with a degree of success, you're going to have a team that everybody loves. And Jol did it, came fifth. He still thinks it's his team that went and won the Carling Cup, I agree.
Yeah.
But Pochettino's doing it as well, and there's no way you can't look at this team and just love every single aspect of what's going on at the moment. And I think that boils down not just to sort of their personalities and the way they play and how good we are. I think things like Danny Rose on Sunday, first of all, the block that he put in against, I think it was Silva, which must have, I only watched the highlights, and I swear I got winded from it. It was a yard away, and it went straight into that bit, like the sternum. Just got up, got on with it, started running again. And also the bit in the second half where he pointed to play the ball out. A cane was down, he pointed and said it was going out. And then just ran 10 yards and then kicked the ball out up there. And everyone on that side of the ground was fuming. as he tends to do. He's got a habit of doing that.
That was
really
that was right up there with Harry Kane kicking the ball out of play when he was offside and then spitting on himself.
Yeah.
It was a brilliant moment. That's probably the highlight of the game, I think, with it not being a great game. I mean, obviously the goals are great.
Let's talk about the second goal, because I think, like I say, the quality wasn't really there. I thought City's goal was good.
Have we spoken about the first goal enough? I mean, admitted that it wasn't a penalty.
It wasn't even close to a penalty, I don't think.
I mean, if it happened against Spurs, I would have been beyond livid.
Yeah.
So
that's a couple we've got this season. We had the one against Leicester in the cup as well, at home last minute. Do you remember to get the replay?
Oh yeah.
And that was Rose again as well. Yeah. Two entirely different incidents. But
I thought, as a general point, Clattenburg was absolutely abysmal.
Yeah.
Just like horrifically
true
bad.
True to type. He's awful.
He's awful.
Genuinely.
I mean,
awful.
There was a genuine case that Yaya Toure shouldn't have been on the pitch.
Yeah, that as well. Yeah, two yellows.
It didn't show on much of the day.
I heard about it.
Bothered me, but he splattered Dembele, who always has the beating of him, which I love.
Yeah.
Dembele loves playing Yaya, and then about 10 minutes later, he clattered someone else from behind.
Mm.
Oh, clattered Wimmer with quite a late challenge, but. It was never a penalty.
Let's talk about Eriksen's goal, though, because that, all round, I felt that was a really Spurs goal. We were facing our own goal, and within five seconds, we scored. And I think a lot of that, Lamella's run and pass was excellent, and really, it's rightly getting a lot of plaudits, but he was the one that ran back, and I think it was Toure who had the ball there as well.
Toure lost the ball, yeah.
And Lamella's not... I mean, he puts himself about, but he can be... brushed aside, let's say, if he's...
Well, I don't know if I agree with that.
No, I don't think I agree with that.
He can bully fullbacks.
I think,
most
of the time, it will end with him kicking someone and they'll fall over. He doesn't get bullied, but
back to the other City game, the 4-1, where he was just shrugging Zabaleta off the ball time and again.
Yeah, true. I still don't... it's common.
I think the problem with Lamella is... No, not a problem, but... People are only just starting to realise, again, this is a kind of media thing and a fan thing, that he's a bit of a bastard.
Yeah.
And I think this has been something that he's done ever since he came to Spurs.
Someone on Football Weekly, I can't remember who it was, someone on Football Weekly said this week that when Pochettino brought Lamella on, it was a bit of a gamble because Chadli would have been a harder working option.
Yeah.
And I think that just shows that people don't really understand.
People still see Lamella as this potentially luxury player.
It's just because he looks effeminate. It's
as
simple
as that. He's Argentine, but you've said that.
Because he's an Argentine player.
Argentine,
I think.
Must have Raquel May's work. Yeah.
But honestly,
I think. Imar's physicality. It's like, no.
Very early on in the season, Dan, and it may not have been on a pod, it may have just been in conversation somewhere, but you were saying about how if he's got this reputation, and he played in Argentina, so River Plate, wasn't he?
Yeah, he came from River.
And he did it all the time there as well, but he went to Europe and he went to Roma and he scored, you know, we've all seen the YouTube clips because we all got excited before he joined, but that was kind of what he became known for. But you were like, he's a bastard, this guy.
I think it's true that when he was adapting to the Premier League, which was a lengthy process, not helped by that injury that ruled him out for the whole of the Sherwood tenure, and most of the UB as well, he lost the ball a lot and he was kind of shrugged off it a lot. But I think almost ever since Pochettino's been manager, Pochettino's famous for these pre-seasons where he drills people and bulks them up. I think almost ever since then, Lamella's been a completely different specimen.
I'm not sure I agree with the extreme of it, but I mean, the point that I was making was that he tracked back to get back to Toure.
Yeah,
I think between him and Dier, we won the ball back.
In terms
and then
of
again,
covering
it was
ground, I think Lamella, in terms of winning the ball back and not just winning it back, but then either using it intelligently or making sure he's in a position to be in the receiving end of the counter, he's so good at. I mean, I've seen so many times this season where he's literally won the ball in the right back position and Spurs have countered and he's been on the edge of the box.
Yeah,
he does that so well.
Yeah,
this wasn't quite that, but...
And his in terms of his productivity, that's another thing he gets criticised for, is not actually doing anything. Mm. But he's got one of the best assist rates in the team, I think.
Yeah, and his goal return's not that bad.
It's certainly improving.
It's great in the Europa League this year. He's got like five in the Europa League.
But then even in the league, I can't think of too many because he hasn't scored that many. But this is a progressing player and in a progressing team.
Someone pointed out on Twitter that it's nice that goal was kind of made from the bail money because that gets so much stick. But yes, it's Lamela to Eriksen.
Lovely. It's great finish as well. That is so calm. And I think Seb made the point on Rule of Roost this week that Joe Hart is one of the best one-on-one shot stoppers in the league. And I agree. Hart is excellent at what he does. Eriksen seemed to take about 3 seconds longer than he should have done. Do you know what I mean? That he let it come across... came across the ball all while Joe Hart was kind of doing his starfish in front of him and then, as they say, scenes.
Yeah.
Absolute scenes. People were posting injury pictures on Twitter today, apparently. Injury images, like, so their knees all like busted up from like, being crushed at the front and, you know, yeah, it's great.
Yeah, and another thing I noticed is that it's the third time in the last four league games that Pochettino's made a game-changing substitution. So against Palace, he brought on Chadli, who assisted Kane and then scored, which is overlooked because of Ali's goal in between. Against Watford, he brought on Ali, who got an assist within about 4 minutes, I think it was. And against City, he brought on Lamela, who got an assist within about 10 minutes. And I think that was a criticism that was often levelled at Pochettino, that he doesn't make good substitutions and he's not decisive enough at bringing someone off. But last season, I would argue that was simply because he didn't have anyone good on the bench, ever.
Also, you can't discount the fact that he's still a relatively young manager, so he's going to be improving and getting better, which is why it would be nice to now sign him up to a very, very long-term contract.
Yeah.
Because you'd imagine he's only going to get better, and he's already, you know, working wonders. I can't actually think of any other manager in my Spurs manager in my lifetime that actually improves players the way he does. I mean, plenty of managers have had their, you know, positive attributes, but in terms of actually being a coach that improves players, and I can't really think of that many managers around that do that. Most of them are more about taking a talented player, a group of talented players, and making them work as a team.
Mm.
Whereas he is able to do that, but also to improve. I mean, look at Dembele, look at Rose, look at Chadli, pretty much all of them.
So say a lot of the players that he's playing now were either with us when he joined or signed quite early on. I think it's only Ali and Son, if you call them in the first 11. And Alderweireld, of course, who weren't there. And that is a low amount. There is such a high turnover of players in teams now that... I mean, look at what he's done with Rose. It's incredible. He's the benchmark now for improvement, I think. And that's this kind of like this... Also, this no excuse for not putting the shift in and improving yourself or at least trying to improve yourself. And if you don't, then you're gone. And that's it.
It also means we can never write off players ever again. I mean, like...
Way.
I mean, NG has had quite a lot of stick, but you just can't say... I mean, next season, he could be amazing because all the evidence is that players are going to get better. So I'm just going to stop, I think. Stop criticising. Like Dembele is the obvious example because I've said a lot of horrible things about Dembele over the years.
And have you?
Yes, and people have started going back in there. People have started going
Kev
back.
I can also apologise.
I did. Of course.
Although I would say I didn't think it was great on Sunday.
It got man of the match on Sky.
Yeah, that was absurd. It should clearly have been Rose, but there you go.
Yeah, that's Sky. Is there anything else to add on City? We've really overran on this, and we need to get on to Thursday night, the Fiorentina game. Happy to move on, or would you like to add anything, Dan? You had
I wanted to talk a little bit about the celebration, but we've kind of touched on it.
We'll just say how amazing it was.
I think you posted on Twitter, and I hadn't seen it because it wasn't Sky's footage, it was NBC. But I watched it about
I actually had it on a loop and fell asleep to it on Sunday.
Lovely stuff.
It was just, it was really.
Rather than watching Sherwood on much of the day.
Just when he clenched his fist and then the roar from the away.
But that's happened a few times. He did it. There's footage of him doing it at Norwich as well. He walked over. There's fan footage of in the Norwich end. And it's quite a way away, obviously. It's the opposite side of the pitch to where the Spurs away fans were. And you just see this little sort of, like
this
tiny little figure.
Just
a little figure walking across the pitch, like sort of clapping. And this huge roar. And that's one of the most pleasing things to me, is that people are finally, if you didn't like Pochettino before, then you don't really have a lot to base that on now. You know, you can't deny what he's doing and what he's already done. And he's getting full backing. Love him. Right, let's move on to Fiorentina on Thursday. You've done
some... Can I just do a shout out?
Yeah, absolutely.
So remember last week when we were wondering if we had any regular Aussie listeners?
Yeah.
My brother lives in Australia and listens every week.
So is he an Aussie?
He's not an Aussie, but he's taken it badly. He sent me a furious text message. Alex, sorry mate, appreciate your support.
We tend to piss off our family members, don't we?
We do. He got quite bitter though. He then sent me a message back just saying, wasn't a great pod anyway, Jeremy. Tom didn't even watch the game. So I was like, oh, well, fuck you.
Alex, you've got a fair point. Yeah.
He won't be impressed this week.
Well.
You haven't watched it again.
Sorry, Alex.
You watch it on Thursday?
I will be watching on Thursday, Cheers. Yeah.
Last.
Might even watch it the weekend as well.
Okay.
Yeah. Speaking of which, Dan, you have actually done some research on Fiorentina. We don't tend to do research on games coming up anyway, but let alone Europa League, so kudos. Do you want to run with it, or do you like me to say it?
Shall I just rattle through it?
Yeah, go ahead.
They're third in the Serie A. They've got 49 points from 25 games, which is almost an identical points to games ratio as Spurs, who have got 51 from 26. But they're 8 points behind Juve, and they're only two ahead of fourth place Roma. So I guess whereas we're looking up the league, I think they're really looking down at that, because they're third at the moment, and that's the last Champions League place in Italy. What did I note that was quite interesting? After the second leg, they've got to play Napoli, who are second, and then Roma, who are fourth.
Right.
So I think normally we assume that the continental sides are just going to take the Europa League seriously, because they do tend to. But Fiorentina have as much reason to maybe not be interested in... As much reason as Spurs do, I think, to weaken their side for both the legs.
Yeah.
Because they are in a real scrap for that last Champions League place.
What do you think will happen in terms of team selection on our side? Because I feel like we're now in a position where we don't need to look so heavily at what the other team's doing, because we have got, I think you said, Dan, last week, that it's not, even if we did play a weakened side, it wouldn't be an obvious thing. We've got no Stambulis and, you know, whoever else, Soldado.
Well, we'd know if it wasn't our first 11, but it's not like Pochettino has to play players that he plainly doesn't trust and that he plainly doesn't want in the club.
Yeah.
Everyone in that group, without exception, I think, is wanted by Pochettino and trust.
He can play our first choice central midfield from last season if he wants to, as a rotation option, if he puts Bentaleb and Mason in. So I think the only real decision is, and this goes for all the cup games and for the rest of the season probably, is what you do about Kane, really. Is do you start him in all the cup games, or do you start Son or Chadli up front?
We've got three in a row now, so we've got Fiorentina away, Palace at home in the FA Cup, and then Fiorentina at home.
I suspect we're going to take the Europa League more seriously than the FA Cup.
I think so as well.
I think Kane will
play
Thursday and Chadli will play against Palace.
Yeah, I agree.
I had to guess.
I'm
slightly more concerned about the Dier situation than the Kane situation, because without Vertonghen, Toby's going to need a rest at some point, or if not a rest, then Pochettino might not want to risk him, because losing him as well as Vertonghen would be potentially catastrophic. And the problem we have now with Dier is that he's first choice defensive midfielder and backup centre back.
Yeah,
at the moment.
He's played the centre back against Leicester and
Colchester. He swapped in at Colchester and the cup and at Leicester. Yeah.
Leicester, yeah.
So hopefully Bentaleb, it's not immediately clear what's going on with him because he did play for the under-21s, but hopefully he's trusted to play one of those games as a defensive midfielder, and then Dyer can have a rest.
Surely this is where the virtues of like Bentaleb being brought back in slowly, it needs to pay dividends. He needs two out of the next three games could be massive for him to play, both in terms of his fitness and form and our season, and not having to put square pegs in and say flogging people like Dyer and or Alderweireld.
In an ideal world, it would be Alderweireld plays against Fiorentina and Bentaleb plays in midfield, maybe with Mason or Tom Carroll, and then Dyer has a rest and plays centre back against Palace with Alderweireld having a rest. I feel like Potts is going to play Dyer in both because he's just so important.
He has missed a game, but not through injury. Yeah, he's suspended for Liverpool. But
I think the obvious thing to do is to give Dyer a rest and play Alderweireld and Wimmer, because I mean this may sound a bit simplistic, but central defenders don't have to cover as much ground during a game. And obviously it's a mental fatigue thing as well, but I think Dyer is the one that you would assume would need a rest, and we have got a theoretical replacement in terms of Bentaleb. So yeah, I think just maybe drop him out in one or two of these cup games, and the rest kind of takes care of itself, I think. I mean, you can rotate the attacking midfielders, the fullbacks, even the goalkeeper if we're feeling really daring. I think it's going to be fine. And you know, all the indications is that Pochettino pays a lot of attention to, you know, the fitness levels of players, and they're using a lot of data and stuff to decide who needs a rest at any given point. So I think it should be fine. And I think we should take the cups as seriously as we can, because I think it's a really dangerous thing to start thinking, oh, maybe we should drop. Because I know that we've had a few questions along the lines.
Yeah, I was going to say,
should we just drop out? Throw one of the cup.
Yeah, and considering the outrage when we do play a slightly weakened team, it amazes me that there are still people out there that can think along those lines. And I appreciate that there is the positive side of that is we could potentially win the league or certainly get top 2-3, certainly Champions League. But we've done it before. We did it against Fiorentina for the sake of another cup last season. We threw those games. I mean, and in the end, we got nothing.
Yeah.
And it just still amazes me, and it perplexes me that we've got two sides of our fan base, and one of them are just so committed to getting Champions League football. To what end? I don't know. Obviously, well, I do know, of course. But like, I had this argument with somebody, and they said, "So we can attract better players, so we can improve as a team." And I said, what? And ultimately, what? And he was like, win things. It was like, well, you've got a chance to win something now. So why has it always got to be about next season and the season after?
Yeah, good point.
Also, I don't think you create a winning team by saying we're not going to try and win everything.
And finishing third.
I think this is the mistake managers have made in the past. I mean, Redknapp is the obvious example. If you want players to have the mentality to go out and win and be trying to win every second of every game, you've got to demonstrate that yourself as a manager by saying, we are going to try and win this and we're going to play as good a team as we can. So, yeah, I would really be strongly against starting to, you know, throw cup games just because we're in a strong position in the league. I think it's a really bad idea from a psychological point of view.
There's almost no chance of it. I mean, as I said, the only way he can be seen to be throwing those games is if he does actually put like Carter Vickers and Winks in the team, and which he won't do.
Even if Onuma played as well, though,
he's been part of the first team squad, and he's looked really good. So I wouldn't have a problem with that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't see it as
that's what
necessary.
I mean. Sorry,
I think, but it's worth pointing out that we haven't. In every Europa League game so far, we haven't played with the same intensity that we play within the Premier League. It's not It's not the same high press. It's not the same crowding out the opposition. And it'll be interesting to see if he keeps it up now that we're in the knockouts.
Yeah, I was going to... There was a good article...
to find, sort of look for the weaknesses and hope that individual quality gets us over the line.
So there was an article this week, I think it was in The Guardian, that said exactly
that.
Yeah,
I think it was Barney Roney. I think he
It said we just don't get out of first gear in the Europa League because we really don't need to in the group stages. It's treated like friendlies almost.
If Fiorentina are a potentially Champions League club, if they stay in the position they're currently in. So that probably won't work. It's strange because we could easily be out of both cups by this time next week.
Yeah.
Or by Thursday next week because Palace will have a fired up Abbey by Hall. They're not a
can
bad
he play?
Side. They're not. He can play. They're not a bad side. Fiorentina are a great side. And I wonder how people would feel then if we were out of both. Yeah, I agree. I'd like to see us go as far as we can.
Me too. Let's do some listener questions. Quite positive ones that we've picked out of it. Christopher Leakes at Mr. Chris Leakes. Please, can you suggest some coping strategies to get us through the next few months? Clean your fridge.
Yeah.
How did it work? Did it work? Did you?
Well, the fridge is clean. It took me a long time, though.
It meant... is spotless.
It meant I had a late night as well, which was... Yeah. Yeah, clean your fridge. Just generally housework, I think. It's a good way of coming down.
Yeah. Something productive. Dan, you write about it, so that's kind of your...
That doesn't help.
Does it not?
Actually, it does, because you have to be... Yeah, I do have to be a little bit more dispassionate if I'm writing about it. So, yeah, just write for the Tottenham way. There you go.
This is recruitment.
Do some cutting-edge, impartial journalism on Spurs. That'll make you feel better.
Windy at Windy Coys. Will our title win be bittersweet for bankrupt Spurs, Kev, due to the lack of game time for Ryan Mason? You're a massive Mason fan, aren't you?
I am a massive Mason fan. I have been since he was a young lad.
Sounded very sure with that.
Yeah, I was going to say that, but I thought...
You spotted him before
I've
anyone else.
No, is basically the answer, because... in a way. Obviously, I'd like him to have played more, but you can't... I mean, he's already played more for the Spurs first team than I ever thought he would, given the way his career had gone from the age of, I guess, kind of 19 to 22, 23. So I'm just thankful that he actually made it, because it really as great as he was as a kid, it really seemed like it passed him by. So... Yeah, I mean, let's not forget, he scored one of the best goals we've scored this season against Sunderland away.
Yeah.
I mean,
which was our first win and really turned things around.
Yeah. For my face.
When you did your comeback blog, Kev, you said last season was the best season. This one's surpassing it, isn't it?
Yeah, a few people have asked me this question. I think I said this in reply to someone else, is it's a bit like a relationship. You know, the best years of a relationship tend to be further down the line, but still those first moments of a relationship are always magical and something that can never be repeated. So I would say last season is always going to be special for me, because it was a culmination of a lot of things personally as well as in terms of the football, because... Yeah. Yeah, like I said in that thing, very long thing that I wrote, I got the feeling that I think all of us are having now about this team, from watching that Spurs youth team, like feeling a bit of a connection with the players, and, you know, at a time when I was quite disillusioned with the first team. So seeing those players break through last season will always be special, but obviously, like, if we win the title...
Yeah. Well, actually,
when we win the title.
Can I ask you about Mason, actually, just specifically?
Yeah,
because you did watch a lot of him as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
He's had two injuries this season.
Yeah.
The knee injury was a knock against Sunderland, and he twisted his ankle against Chelsea, I think. It's definitely an ankle problem that he's got. Is this a kind of recurrence of the problems that he was? And I know impact injuries are slightly different, but is he just generally really unlucky, or does he have a habit of sort of landing. Yeah, that's what I'm looking for.
I don't remember him missing too many games when he was kind of under 18 level. I mean, he was generally in the team and scoring goals. I think it was more, to be honest, I think it was probably either he or the coaches that were working with him took a decision that he should bulk up, because he was even more slight than he is now when he was a kid. So I think generally if you put on muscle and, you know, your weight goes up, that is just put a strain on your body. So it may be a result of that, but like, without seeing his medical records, of course. It's hard to say. But I think the injury proneness is something that's come as he's moved into adult football. So I tend to think it probably will be that way for the rest of his career. But hopefully, in a way, it might work out quite well for us, because he's a very useful player to have around the squad. And if he's one of those players that never really is fit enough to be demanding to play every week anyway, he could be a useful squad player.
Nicky Butt.
Yeah.
Could be a Nicky Butt. Good show.
Fletcher, you know, that guy that you just, that the manager really trusts and will put him in, doesn't matter when. Absolutely. No, not at all. Ollie Wood at Ollie Kingsley Wood. What are your other favourite lucky decisions, e.g. the first penalty against City, Spurs have had over the years? This is a really good question, because we only really remember the awful ones.
Yeah, the thing is, I can't remember a single one.
I can't. I thought about this. I really can't.
The one that springs to my mind is, do you remember that Sakura penalty against Portsmouth, where it was just the most blatant dive? There was I think it might have been Pedro Mendes that made the tackle. It was a white hart lane. I'm sure I'm not dreaming.
Poor Pedro.
Mendes basically took a bit of a swing at him, but was nowhere near making contact. It was a good, like, you know, foot away from making contact, and Sakura just fell down as if he'd been taken out, and the ref fell for it. And
it was always dramatic, wasn't it, Sakura?
Yeah.
I mean, the Berbatov penalty in the Chelsea Cup final, was that a lucky decision? I can't remember.
Bridge had his hand out.
No, I would say that was a handball.
Yeah, I'd say it was certainly more than the City.
Yeah, there's a really
great, what I really love is that Huddleston had quite clearly lost the ball. He was much better with the ball at his feet anyway. The ball was kind of cannoning around in the area, and you see it. As soon as it hits Bridge's arm, there's a slow-mo shot of it just from sort of behind it, and he's like beside himself appealing for it, because he knows that he's not got a chance, that if Bridge gets that ball away, is it Bridge or Cull?
I think it was Bridge.
Bridge. If he gets that ball away, he ain't catching him. Like, and it's just, you can see this sort of panic.
He's beached in the opposition penalty area.
You can just, he's like, and still trying to play football while he's appealing, so his arms are all over the place. I love it. It's a great moment. Yeah, no, that certainly wasn't lucky.
I really can't.
We could probably do hours on the decisions over the years that have cost
us,
but I honestly couldn't. I can't think of, but we're not that team, are we? We don't go away to Arsenal and get a lucky 1-0, you know, for a dodgy penalty.
Also, didn't we go like two seasons without getting a penalty award in our favour as well? So we haven't really got much to.
That was with Bale as well, wasn't it? And there was some such obvious penalties on him. Let's go with Sakura against Portsmouth, which shows you how little we had.
I just hope I haven't just made that up. But yeah. I'm sure I remember.
It's ringing a distant bell.
I can't think of it. Well outside of my realms, I think. Last question. Adam Burton at AJ Burts. Given focus on youth and unity, aside from sub-goalie and cover for Kane, can we really strengthen this squad? Which I suppose is a good... It's an extension of a question that we've been asked pretty much every week since we started the pod, of who should we sign as backup to Dyer, Kane, whoever. It's a good question. There are obvious holes in the squad, but...
I think it's a good question because of, we know that even if we get Champions League football, it's still going to be quite a tight control of finances because of the stadium.
Mm.
So the question is, can... Even with Champions League football, who could Spurs attract a load of players that would significantly make us any better?
Yeah, and you've got to look at an attitude thing as well.
I think yes, because you can always improve the squad. Mm. I don't want to name names, but
the last time we did, Van der Vaart was a gimme as well, wasn't he? He was literally offered to Redknapp and taken, and it did work out. It was great. He couldn't finish.
Yeah, I don't think we'll be seeing any of that this time.
No, certainly.
The last thing was to
do. Yeah, yeah. Someone said they keep every so often a Van der Vaart quote will come up, and that one about
someone
I should never have left.
Sign him, and it's just like,
it really winds me up. It's like he couldn't do it for more than 65 minutes under Redknapp.
Yeah.
What makes you think that he would? They're just like, oh, it'd be great for 30 minutes. Well, yeah, but it'll be the first 30 minutes and then he'd be limping off, probably.
To be honest, I think we sold Van der Vaart at the right point. I mean, that's
we earned more
probably
money
not
out of it than we bought him for. We actually made a profit on Van der Vaart, which is crazy.
I think we probably got the last of his best years. So.
We made a profit on Carl Norton.
We've
made some astonishing profits.
Yeah, got to say, fair play. Okay, I think we are...
We really didn't answer that, but...
No.
I think you can always improve the squad, but I understand where Adam's coming from.
Yeah.
But
unity is a really important part of this as well. So the character's got to be as... It is as important as ability, and that is now a two... You know, a double-edged sword
for
recruitment.
Which is why we're not really in a position to kind of pick players out that we think we should sign, because we're not privy to that kind of information. It's hard enough thing for... professional like Paul Mitchell or whoever's scouting these players, it's hard enough for them to determine the character of these potential signings. So for us to pick them out, I think, because you can talk about good players. I mean, Berrino is sorry to bring him up, but that's the obvious one in terms of it seems like he might have the sufficient talent to be a good signing, but has he got the right mentality? And you know,
that's
in question.
That ship is sailing, I think.
Yeah, I think we've tried as hard as we're likely to try for a player that may or may not work out as good as he is already. We don't know, do we? We don't know, full stop. Sorry, Adam. Let's finish up. Kev, thank you so much for coming down again. Didn't have your sidekick Adam Nathan, but he was on a couple of weeks ago. He was outraged that he wasn't invited to this one, but he's had his turn. Thank you so much for coming down again. Course, follow him at Bankrupt Spurs on Twitter.
No, don't
unless, yeah.
Don't want any more followers. It's like it's getting like a job having to answer to people's moronic comments.
Sorry.
Follow me, I want more followers.
Yeah. Give your moronic comments to Dan_KP, is it?
Correct.
Or at the Tottenham Way for the podcast.
Both.
Might as well give mine out now as well, at TomFoynes87. And we'll see you next week for a Fiorentina review and preview, and a Palace review as well. Join us next week. Come on, you Spurs.
The greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.